driving. Bill Lane crosses up. Van Vliet, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Give it back for three. No, it's good.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Friends, enemies, and anyone in between, welcome back to another edition of the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND. I'm Leo Stauderher, your sports director here at WZND, and once again, we're back in triple threat formation. The whole crew, we're an hour early, but it's still the same three Red Zone crew. We have WZND's production director and the voice of the Quad City Storm, Mr. Joey Dwyer.
Feeling good tonight, boys. We talked about it. The early shows usually throw us off a little bit, but I'm not too mad at it today.
And our third voice is our producer, Mr. Joe Kennedy, who slept overnight at Fell Hall last night, essentially, after he was covering the Illinois State versus Drake game for TV10. Joe pulled an all-dayer.
It was a long day. I got at Fell Hall 7 o'clock in my suit, left Fell Hall at 1:30 in the morning in my suit. So, I mean, it was a fun one. I honestly had a good day yesterday. It was fun to do.
At least you looked good all day.
Yeah.
And we'll start with that day. Why don't you? Because, Joe, as Joe mentioned, it was the Illinois State versus Drake game. The Redbirds playing probably the second best team in the valley in Drake. They were breaking out the black jerseys. It was a packed house at Redbird Arena. Joe was there. We had a crew there. David Kaplan and Telly Hughes were on the call. And for the Redbirds, it was kind of the same struggle we've seen all season, where it was you don't know which team's going to show up. Because if we go through the last week for the Illinois State men's basketball team, they crushed Evansville on Friday, put up almost 100 points. Then they lose to Evansville on Sunday by 3 points, barely scored over 50. And then they go to overtime against Drake last night in a game that if a few things went their way, they could have walked away with the win. We had this discussion last week, but here we are again. You never know which team's going to show up for the Redbirds, and that consistency comes back to hurt them again.
And with the loss of Cy Chapman, truly, hold on, boys. Give me 1 second here.
Joey's switching his mic.
All right, can you hear me? Oh, there it is.
Really
so bad. I don't know what is going on with that microphone. But anyway, having the loss of Cy Chapman really does hurt the Birds. But they came out last night and they showed that even without his big presence in the paint, they can really get stuff done. And Drake is not a bad team. They're what, third?
They're
the
preseason favorite. I think they're second place now after that win.
And they're like,
Lola.
And the fact that the Birds were able to take them to overtime and almost get the job done, a point away, and it was just that last Antonio Reeves shot that didn't go in. But, oh my goodness, what a fantastic game, and it gives Redbirds fans so much hope.
And what an atmosphere it also was that night. I mean, the fans came in for the jersey, the 600 replica jerseys that were made. And then after the game, I want to talk a little about Josiah Strong. After the press conference was over and everything, everything was wrapped up, and he just says, I have to say something real quick, out of his own will and everything. He said, just shout out to the fans. Thank you for coming out. If you keep coming out, supporting us, we're going to keep putting on a show and put in even more effort. I mean, and they put on, like, the hardest effort I've seen in a game in a long time, in the most electric crowd I've been at a Redbird Arena in probably 2 years. And it was just, it was an awesome game. Yeah. It was a tough result, and everyone was heartbroken.
Talking about the Redbirds versus Drake at home, this was an interesting stat that I didn't realize until last night. The Redbirds were on a 4-game losing streak against Drake, but they were on a 7-game winning streak against the Bulldogs at Redbird Arena, because their last four matchups were either in Des Moines against Drake on the road or in St. Louis for Arch Madness. So the Redbirds had won their last seven games against Drake, who's a consistent program here at Redbird Arena. And even if you remember in the 2019-20 season, they upset Drake on senior night at home. That was a big win going into Arch Madness and then lost at the Enterprise Center. But this team does kind of bring the energy this season when they are at home.
Talking about Cy Chapman, Joey, Liam McChesney, you know, last night made his first career start, and he absolutely just stepped right into that role, kind of that Chapman. I mean, you can't replace Cy Chapman. They're all saying he's their guy, and it's going to be obviously be a big miss, but I feel like with that injury, they maybe had some extra motivation, too, behind him. And Liam McChesney, Kendall Lewis, the two forwards that started last night, they combined for 28 points in that one. And then over 15 rebounds too as well. And so it's just big that you get that production now.
And McChesney stepped up to play in a big way, and he really proved a lot to his coaching staff and to the fans. But one guy that I want to see more of, and I've really like been craving to see this guy because he was so good last year, Howard Fleming.
Yeah.
Has had some good nights, but like last night, only 2 points in the starting lineup. He played 23 minutes. That's the guy. He's one of those guys that you need to see having a better night. We talked about last week the lack of depth scoring on this squad, and you had four guys in double digits in the starting lineup. Mm-hmm. Nobody else with more than six. You have to have those points off the bench, and even in your starting five.
But if you look at Mark Freeman, though, too, he's the guy who had 10 assists, first time ever for Redbird since Malik Yarbrough in 2017 to put up assists. So that guy, the playmaking ability of Mark Freeman goes way beyond, I think, just him putting up points.
But, okay, so Joey touched on the Howard Fleming this season, that he hasn't shown maybe that next level, the progression. That's something I want to kind of go back to, is the players like Howard Fleming and Iman Washington and even Abdu Jai, these guys that come in, start a few games as freshmen that just really don't take that next step. I think that's the thing that's maybe holding this team back, is that you have guys like McChesney and Freeman and Lewis coming in as transfers to maybe make up for that lack of development from the guys that come in out of high school.
And I don't know what it is, but Iman Washington has really not seen minutes in a lot of the games this season, and he really looked like he was going to be a cornerstone of this program after the way he played late last season. So I don't know if his role has kind of been taken over by these transfers, like Leo said. But even when you have a guy like that who is really good and he's proven that he can be a producer for this team, why not get him more than 4 minutes off the bench in an overtime game?
I think that's just the problem. It feels like we have the same show every week talking about the men's team, is the lack of consistency and the lack of development. Some young players taking that next step. I still think, even though it was a feel-good win last night, it was great to see them compete against a good team in the Valley. I just can't feel confident about this team going into the postseason tourney, because the things that need to happen that other programs are having happen this season just aren't happening with this team. It still just feels like the same team we've been watching for the past few years.
This team is completely different than the past two seasons. Like, come on. This team, they were down 11 points at the beginning of the game. Last 2 years, I don't see them coming back, stuff like that. Like, they show the heart and effort that at least they haven't seen. They don't have the talent compared to other Missouri Valley. I mean, they might even, but they don't have the production level they've been putting up there from the offensive and especially defensive standpoint. That's where they're a really good offensive team. But on the defensive side of things, it hasn't been great.
So then what do you expect from this team? Like, do you think they're getting past Thursday?
They're blowing out expectations kind of for what everyone was predicting this season.
Well, when your expectations last in the Valley, it's not that hard to clear them, is what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, you're still projected to be last by a lot compared to the other Missouri Valley Conference schools at the beginning of the season. Like, they were way below Evansville, even.
But, okay, so let's talk about that.
Compared to last year's team. And
they lost to Evansville on Sunday.
But they also lost two guys that transferred up to pretty good schools. And now they're coming to this year, and they're going way beyond expectations. I'm not saying they're going to be like a top three team this year. That's what they should be doing, because obviously not. But I'm saying that this team is at least better than last two seasons.
And this is the whole argument, right, between the pessimistic Redbird fan and the optimistic Redbird fan.
I'm not even being – I'm just saying, like, they're not like a top four or five team. But.
And I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying that I think that you have a lot of credence to what you're saying, Joe, where this team – is way better than we expected. And we even talked about it, like, in our season preview back in October. We were talking about how much we were dreading this season because it was Antonio Reeves and his scrubs.
Right.
Like, that was this team basically coming in. Yeah. And it turns out that they have built a pretty fleshed out roster, maybe lacking a little bit of depth.
And defense. And, it's the defense.
Yeah, is this a team that's built to make a run in St. Louis in March? No.
Probably
not. I don't think anybody's expecting that. But it's giving them a nice foundation to build upon, because a lot of these guys aren't going to leave after the season.
I just don't see where it's happening, where they're not developing other players that you need to rely on the transfer portal, that you're relying on these overagers from other programs that are eventually going to leave. You don't have a player that you're going to develop over 4 years that you can build a program around, like you see Loyola do and Drake do, and even teams like Missouri State. It's that lack of consistency year in and year out that troubles me with this program, and it still just feels like it's the same thing every year.
And I think that there has been a lot of upheaval, and this sounds like such a cop-out to blame it on COVID, but I think that does have an impact on how you're able to scout and your ability to go out and find these high school kids. So you have to rely on that transfer portal. These guys coming from low major D1 or D2 schools to come in and try to help, because ISU doesn't have the kind of funding to recruit these other schools while there's all this other stuff going on.
And what Leo's saying about recruiting, I mean, they had a really good recruit in DJ Horn, but then he decided to leave too. Like with Antonio Reeves too together, like they've had decent recruits, but obviously they're not keeping up with the Missouri Valley.
These guys
are juniors now. What have they done in the classes since that?
Washington and Fleming
just haven't played much. That's the thing that bugs me, is the guys that they're recruiting that you expect to be those foundational pieces aren't progressing.
And so at the end of the day, it's all about getting these players as freshmen and keeping them. And so that's what they have to do looking forward. But as far as this season goes, you play with the roster you have. And the roster they have is not half bad.
And that's fair. That's fair. It'll be fun to see where they go this season. Maybe they'll shatter some expectations. Maybe I'll be proven wrong by the end of the year. But
crazy things happen in March, Leo.
Of course. But for now, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have some NFL news to recap. That's coming up next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Illinois State infielder Owen Miller, and you're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. Neil Starter, Joey Dwyer, and Joe Kenny. Now we're back here with some news in the NFL, because there's been some activity in Hallis Hall. The white smoke is coming out of the chimneys there, and the Bears have new management. It's two more guys named Ryan and Matt, but they have a general manager. They have a general manager and a head coach now. They have hired Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus to take over the reins from Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy. And let's dive into that, because I think we should start with the GM, because that's a hire that came first. That was the coherent thing to do, what a rational organization would do, right? Hire the GM. The GM hires the coach. Is that a sign of progress?
I was happy with the Poles hiring, because there are a lot of names getting thrown out. And obviously the GM, all these candidates, they don't really have as much press on them coming in as the head coaches do, because you see these coaches' resumes, but you don't always get to see what goes on in the front office. But when you look at the history that Ryan Poles has, he's been with the Chiefs since 2009, and the Chiefs have been Super Bowl contenders since 2016. Mm-hmm. So he has learned, if he's not directly responsible for those roster moves, he has learned how to build a successful roster and a successful coaching staff.
Yeah, it's always just like kind of – when you're searching for a new GM and everything, it's kind of hard to really decide, or at least as a fan, because, I mean, you're not having these interviews with the coaches, and everyone on Twitter is like, oh, this should be who it is. It's like, what do you know? You've never had any experience in the NFL working in a front office or anything like that. And I get the McCaskies. I mean, they've been brutal bad for the past 20-plus years or so. But, I mean, it's hard to decide, I guess, when you really look at it.
And that's my thing is, nobody really knows what – exactly how much involvement Poles has or whatever. It's hard to judge right away, because you don't know, unless you're hiring a GM that maybe had a previous stop, you don't know what their body of work per se is or what it is they struggle with or whether he's an offensive or defensive guy yet. So I think the GM has a longer evaluation period than the coach before you can say if it was a bad hire or a good hire.
Yeah.
I think that's where you have to watch a couple draft classes or some free agent moves before you can really say, was that a home run hire or not?
Yeah. And I'm happy that the McCaskies did finally get the GM and Poles was able to be involved in the head coaching search and everything, because I was really worried that they were just going to do both and kind of force upon like Nagy and Pace did about 5 years
ago. And I don't know if you guys saw, I saw somewhere it was reported that half of the upper level management of the Bears really wanted Dan Quinn. The other half really wanted Jim Caldwell, but they left the decision up to Poles. And that's why we got Eberflus, because Poles made his own decision, which I think is a huge step forward for the organization.
And I think that's encouraging, because you look at the last GM in Ryan Pace, he was saddled with the head coach in John Fox. That wasn't necessarily his call to make. You bring in the inexperienced GM, a veteran coach that maybe he didn't want. He was already playing from behind with his first coaching hire. So then he had to hire Matt Nagy, who was his guy, and their fate was tied together. But now that you have Poles was able to hire his guy right away, he can start making that organizational little transparency going.
Yeah.
He's picking players that fit the coach's system. The coach and the GM can talk, figure out what kind of player they want, what kind of system they want to run, and hopefully they'll be on the same page then.
Yeah, and so going to the head coach now, Eberflus, everyone, not everyone, a lot of people were saying they just really want the offensive-minded coach and everything. And me personally, I was just thinking that that's just so much pressure as a franchise, getting that coach as a front office. And that, if that's not your guy, then and you just look like you're doing the same exact thing. So going to that defensive side, you see teams with the Bills, with the Chargers, they got new, younger coaches on the defensive side, and then they get the coordinator. That the biggest move might be the offensive coordinator right now for Justin Fields, though.
Okay. Joe, you alluded to it. All these people on Twitter you see talking about, oh, the Bears should have hired this offensive coach. Oh, the Bears need somebody to coach up Justin Fields. And Leo's about to tell me that I shouldn't throw stones if I live in a glass house.
Okay.
But that is the most meatball take I've ever seen in my entire life. It's garbage.
From the
it's
meatball garbage. Himself.
Do you not, like seriously think about it. Do you not think that this guy who is coaching in the NFL maybe knows a thing or two about running an offense, even though he's a defensive-minded coach? Like, do you, like, that is just, it's lunacy to me to think about these people who are like, oh, well, he's, this is a total waste of a hire because he's not an offensive-minded coach. It doesn't matter. Sean McDermott's not an offensive-minded coach.
I agree with you, Joey.
You can go on and on.
I just got a little hot under the collar.
A rare thing where I agree with Joey on. I think when you're hiring the coach, NFL, college, doesn't matter. The coach is the CEO. They oversee everything. That's who they want. You have to know a little bit about everything. You hire smart people to work as the offensive coordinator, as the quarterback's coach, as the D coordinator, special teams. You hire smart people that you can manage, that you can trust to do their job, and the coach has to have a little bit of responsibility in everything. So I'm not worried that the coach comes from a defensive background because I want him to see how he can oversee a whole team. It's like a company or a program. Like, if he brings in a good offensive coordinator that knows more about the offense than he does, I think it should be fine. I'm just not overreacting to it yet because nobody knows anything about these coaches. Like, it just, I'm not bothered by it. I'm going to give him a training camp. I'm not overreacting right now. Look at what people said about Matt Nagy when they hired him.
Yeah.
He's a great hire. He's a great football mind. Like, everybody says the same thing about every coaching move.
Until you become a head coach, because
you
never have that experience of being a head coach.
Right.
Unless, obviously, you were once before. But just looking at Eberflus, just the stuff he's been able to do from college all the way up to the NFL, I mean, with the Cowboys and everything, he led them to becoming a better defense as a linebacker group and such. And then his linebacker coach in Cleveland, he led a linebacking group that was arguably in the top five at that time and everything. So everywhere he's gone, he's been able to improve a defense. And with the Bears slipping kind of defensively, I think it's going to be important. I think it's going to be a really good year for this Bears defense, and I think they're going to be able to improve. And, like, looking at the Colts, they don't have the major stars or everything.
No.
Like DeForest
Buckner.
But
they're a consistent team every year.
Yeah, they just, in the way they play defense, they play together as a team. Like Eberflus likes to use kind of how Lovie Smith used to do it. Just everyone fly to the ball and get to the ball.
And
punch the ball out and get that peanut punch back into
Chicago. I think that suits a lot of the talent that the Bears have on the defensive side of the ball already with guys who are super, super fast like Eddie Jackson, Roquan Smith. You even have guys like Robert Quinn who have a lot of speed when it comes to edge rushers.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a lot of these guys who can play that super fast, high-paced, fly-to-the-ball type defense. I think it'll be really good for them to kind of get a fresh system in there because they were really good in 2018, and then it just got stale.
And we got to remember, too, like they don't have the first-round pick and everything, but they also have the seventh most cap space in the league right now before even getting rid of some other contracts.
Right.
So this team could look maybe not a lot different, but there could be a couple of key more players coming in on the defense, but also hopefully most important, the offense.
I was going to say that, how you have the money now that you can address positions of need. And so I'm interested to see how Poles does that. If he automatically starts signing out long-term contracts or big money, or if he kind of just starts with a year of roster evaluation, see what he has before then he starts spending that money. It'll be interesting to see, and it does feel like there's finally hope. It might not end up working out well, but at least there's this new excitement.
There's something new to look forward to that
right.
We've been needing for the past probably year and a half, 2 years.
And it's an exciting thing too to know that Justin Fields will kind of get to grow with this new system around him, because obviously last year was not successful for the rookie QB.
No.
But I think that now that he's established himself, there's not this uncertainty over who's going to be the starter and, oh, is he going to get his minutes taken away? Because now Justin Fields is the guy. If you're the head coach coming, if you're Eberflus, you know Justin Fields is the guy that you have to work with.
Exactly.
So I'm excited for this offense to be tailored to him.
And last year would have been, I believe, completely different if just Justin Fields would have been the number one throughout the entire training camp, preseason, and everything, because he eventually right away became the number one in about 3 weeks into that season.
And it'll just be fun to see where this goes. We have tons of NFL coverage still coming up in these next couple weeks because the season's not over, but we'll have more recaps and predictions for that kind of next. When we come back after the break, we'll have a little bit of a different direction coming on. Braden Fogerson's going to join the show to talk some NASCAR. That's next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Brady Davis from Redbird Football, and you're listening to Red Zone on 103.3 WZMD.
That was former Redbird quarterback Brady Davis. Hope he's doing well with whatever he's doing now. But we're back on the Red Zone. Leo Stoddard, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kennedy. And now we're joined for the first time in Red Zone history by Braden Fogerson. And Braden's going to be talking about something we really haven't covered in a long time, probably since Andy Olson was the sports director. And that is NASCAR, because there's an upcoming season.
Yeah, you got a whole bunch of new storylines. It's been that sort of trend for the past several years that there's just been a lot of news. Last year, the big storyline was a huge change in the schedule, including adding four extra road courses, something NASCAR fans have been looking for. Now there's a little bit more slight.
Did they do road courses before last year?
They did. They had
not
two.
As much, right?
They had two for the longest time. They added a third one recently, and then now they've added three extra, including one at the F1 track in Austin. That was the storyline last year. Now this year, you have the next gen car, which was supposed to be last year that it was supposed to make its debut, but because of COVID, that was pushed a year back. There are all sorts of changes with that. Now what they were going for with this next gen car was parity. They're mostly just the same exact parts for each team. The rules are very, very much more harsh than they ever used to be for trying to change and alter your parts. And the fines are much more severe for that. They went for more horsepower, something fans were looking for badly. People were very frustrated with the low horsepower package that made for great restarts, but not necessarily racing that made you feel like the deserving winner was always getting a win. Number placements, another big change. Something fans have been upset about, but sponsors were looking for some extra space as well.
How about the new car? How do drivers like get adjusted to that new car? I mean, do they take a long time in the off season to just keep going?
The NASCAR releases these new cars all the time. Like I still remember, and I'm sure you do, growing up as a NASCAR fan, the Car of Tomorrow.
Yes.
When that was a big thing. And everybody was freaking out because it looked different. And
is that the new spoiler one?
Yeah, one that had the front end that was really wonky too. And the drivers just get used to it. Like, these are the best drivers in the world. So it really doesn't affect them that much. They'll always drive how they drive personally, at least in my opinion. I don't think the new car will affect the racing too much. Like you said, this next gen, looking for parity. Yeah. And hopefully that does... that does increase the, like you said, the deservedness of the winner.
Yeah.
But I don't think it'll change too much. I don't think it'll be drastic.
I agree with that. And going back to your question, Joe, there was what was the question again exactly?
How are drivers like adjusting?
It was how are they adjusting? Okay, so for this offseason, they just worked a lot on testing. Drivers like Kurt Busch, a lot of veteran drivers were the ones that were able to test it at first. But Kurt Busch is a driver that was looking like he was going to retire last year. He loved driving the car so much, he decided to stay an extra year. And now he's driving with 2311 Racing under Michael Jordan and Denny Hamlin. Yeah. So very, very exciting knowing that a driver as good as him is willing to stay just to be able to get a chance to drive in a car that is apparently as fun to drive as it is.
Yeah, definitely good for like the reviews, ratings and everything. Yeah.
So going into this season, as self-admittedly someone who doesn't watch much NASCAR, who are some drivers that I should be watching for in this upcoming season that maybe I wouldn't have known of that aren't household names?
Well, for me, my favorite driver, and he's been my favorite driver ever since Jeff Gordon retired, Kyle Larson is the biggest name in NASCAR, the defending champion. He won, I believe, 10 races last year finished it off with a championship. He's going to be the favorite. But with a new car and all those changes and just the fact that the best driver isn't the best driver every single year, it always changes who that person is. And 2 years ago, it was two drivers that were like that. You could have very much a different power balance in the sport. Chase Elliott, Kevin Harvick, Denny Hamlin, Kyle Busch, Martin Truex Jr., Joey Logano, all those guys are very, very good, and any of them I could see an argument for as to why they could be the new guy.
And honestly, like Kyle Larson's season last season was incredible. He had an average finish of 9.4. Mm-hmm. He had 10 wins, 20 top fives. It was incredible last season. And I have so many problems with the way that the chase is set up. I hate the chase. But we do not have nearly enough time to go into all the problems about the chase. Yeah. But
come on,
as far as
I wanted to know.
Okay, so here's the TLDR on why the chase to the cup is bad. Because before the chase, it was whoever had the most points at the end of the year. And sometimes it'd be a really boring finish because one driver like Kyle Larson would dominate the entire season and he'd have it wrapped up 4 weeks before the actual end of the season. Sometimes, like in, what, 92, 93?
Yes, 92.
When there are like six guys in the last race who have a chance to win. But now the chase is set up in this tournament style that just doesn't really translate well to racing.
Yes, and also for this sort of playoff format, it now creates more drama, especially for the cutoff races. Every three races, you cut off the last four drivers in the playoff format. Mm-hmm. So it creates more drama, but at the expense of knowing that you're going to have a deserving champion at the end, especially when you have a driver like Chase Elliott, who won the year prior to Larson, who is certainly the most popular driver in NASCAR, but was definitely not the best driver.
And coming as a shock to no one, you know, NASCAR fans are very traditionalist.
Yeah.
So the whole chase to the cup has just not been responded to very well.
Yeah.
And you were talking about some favorites maybe going into this season. I want to talk about, so once Jimmy Johnson, I used to watch NASCAR every weekend with my dad or mom or everything. And so I was always Jimmy Johnson guy, then Joey Logano, but also Denny Hamlin, who's, I believe, never still won
Cup
series.
Yes.
I mean, he's won 40 plus races and everything, hundreds of top tens. I mean, can he finally bring home that cup?
I think he absolutely can. And one thing that does lend itself to helping out someone like Denny Hamlin is the fact that you've just got to make the final four. And when you have a team as good as Joe Gibbs Racing, you're pretty much guaranteed to at least be in the round of eight. You do what you can to make sure you can get to the round of four. And then you got to focus on that one race at Phoenix. So this is just really just dealing with making sure you have the car for that final race.
He was close last year, right? I think he made like a big comeback in the final part of the playoff part you guys are just talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So here are some drivers that I really like heading into the season. Mm-hmm. And I wanted your opinion. I wanted to bounce because there's not a whole lot of NASCAR guys in the office.
Okay.
So I don't get to talk about it very much. So here are some guys that I really like going into the season. Number one, Eric Almirola. I've always liked Eric Almirola, and with his win in New Hampshire last year, he got into the playoff, and even though he was bounced in the round of 16, I've always really liked him. I really like him with Stuart Haas. I was always a big Tony Stewart guy back in the day, so I really like Stuart Haas racing in general.
Yes.
And I think Eric Almirola is poised to really make some noise this year.
Okay, and I'm glad you brought this up, because Stuart Haas racing was a storyline this year that they had fallen off. Kevin Harvick won 10 races, I believe, last year, which was everyone's pick to win the championship again. He did terrible by comparison, even though he was still very consistent. But Stuart Haas Racing definitely fell off last year. And so what I'm thinking and what my prediction for heading into this year, Stuart Haas Racing isn't going to struggle for a year unless there's a reason. Tony Stewart knows what he's doing. He's a great owner and knows how the sport works. I think, to me, Stuart Haas Racing was just kind of holding off last year because they wanted to make sure they were ready for the next gen. And while every other team was just building on to their final year of the Gen 6 era, I think Stuart Haas Racing was looking for the future.
Okay, so speaking of Stuart Haas Racing, I've got one more guy from the team who I think is going to make some noise. And you might turn your nose up at this, but Chase Briscoe, rookie year last year. And see, I had no idea who he was until he spun Denny Hamlin at the Indy Road Course last summer.
Yeah, because, that was so much fun.
Because no offense, Joe, I hate Denny Hamlin.
I know, there's a lot of haters out there for Denny.
I hate Denny Hamlin.
Yeah. So to see this rookie come in and just absolutely dump him in a road course, I loved it. He had three top tens last year in his rookie year, which isn't too bad. He had an average finish of 19th. I think he's going to take a big step forward. Will he win? Probably not. Mm. But you know what? His Daytona's 500 odds are like plus 60, like 660. I might take those.
Yeah.
Because he's an exciting driver.
And one thing you guys are talking about right now is just like these young guys come out of nowhere. That's one thing that I always enjoyed about NASCAR, that these rookies can come out of nowhere really and like compete in like their first couple of seasons right on on the series.
Yeah, and sometimes it's good for you. Sometimes it can burn you, and that brings me to one more point that I would like to make that I know I want to make, and that is Roush Fenway Racing. They learned a lesson a hard way. They had, I mean, it was 20 years ago, but the most stacked team you've ever seen in NASCAR. And then when Carl Edwards, Matt Kenseth, Greg Biffle left, they were left with a bunch of young guys that didn't translate to any sort of strength in that team, and they really fell off. And now they're adding Brad Keselowski, who's going to be a partial team owner, that is going to sort of hopefully lead that team back to the promised land of being one of the dominant teams right now, because right now they've just been relying on a bunch of young drivers that never panned out.
Yeah.
And this has been a very informative discussion because I really didn't know much about
NASCAR. I'm ready for the season now, yeah.
Going into this, but now I feel like I know all the ins and outs. So yeah. Thanks a lot, guys. I didn't realize we had so many NASCAR buffs around the office. So we're going to keep Braden on because we enjoyed him so much. When we come back, we're going to take things to the three up, three down. So that's coming up next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Going up, coming down.
It's the three up, three down. Three up. Only on the Pulse of Redbird Nation. 103.3 WZND.
You heard that sounder. It's time for a weekly trip to the 3-Up, 3-Down, our pick'em segment for college basketball season. Joey Dwyer, why don't you tell the audience how it is we play this game and let them know what the standings are.
Thanks so much, Leah. So the way that we play 3-Up, 3-Down is you look at the NCAA Men's Basketball Division I schedule, and you can pick
not
any...
Not D2.
Not D2. Yeah, Joe's absolutely right. You can pick any game that starts... Starting at whenever the show ends to whenever the show starts the next week, you have to pick three favorites and three underdogs. One of your games has to be in the Missouri Valley, and one of your games can be over 80% for win probability for one of the teams, according to ESPN's Win Projector. And as far as the standings go, Leo, I don't have them in front of me, but all you got to know is that
I'm bad.
Around the office, around the office, people call him Mean Joe Kennedy. Mean Joe Kennedy sitting in dead last. Joey Dwyer sitting in first and everybody else in between.
I got to ground myself. I'm still out, you know, partying too much from
you
these back-to-back championships.
You talked that big game. Yep, there it is.
Still partying from
back-to-back.
You know?
Yep. Just can't keep that
going. It's too early on in the season to be putting anything against myself. So I'll be doing all right. It's a big week.
It's
ready.
The end of a dynasty.
Let's go.
Let's get it started with our games here. For my first game, we're going to go with one happening tomorrow night. We've got East Tennessee State at the Virginia Military Institute. VMI comes into the game as a 78.8% favorite, just below the 80-point threshold, so I'm going with VMI here.
And then tonight at 6 o'clock in the Missouri Valley, the Loyola Ramblers are going to march downstate to take on the Salukis of Southern Illinois. SIU has lost four of their last five games, guys, and I think they will pick up another loss. I'm going to go with Loyola as a 79.4% favorite in this one.
Those are good odds.
So go Ramblers.
For me, I would say my first up would be Purdue beating Ohio State this Sunday. They're playing in Mackey. Ohio State only has EJ Liddell as far as the big stars. Purdue has several big stars that are leading their team. Travion Williams is going to be matched up against Liddell as well, and he is a better scorer and rebounder than him.
I like the pick, but Purdue has looked human these past couple weeks. My first pick, we're going down south, where Troy is heading to South Alabama to take on the Jaguars. I'm taking the Jaguars in an easy dub right there. And then as far as Steve sees, Steve agrees with you, Joe. He's taking Loyola over the Salukis tonight or tomorrow night?
I feel like this is tonight.
For my next game, we're keeping things in the valley. We have the Beacons of Valparaiso heading down to Carbondale to face the Salukis. SIU is a 73.4% favorite. I really like Southern this year. I think that they should be able to handle this one easily.
And then tonight, again at 6 o'clock, the undefeated in conference play UNC Wilmington Seahawks will be hosting the winless in conference play Northeastern Huskies, who they just beat 3 days ago, so they're coming off a win. Now they're playing again. UNC Wilmington is favored at 64.8%, and I think the Seahawks will give Northeastern their 10th straight loss. But we will also hear more about UNC Wilmington for me in a couple more picks.
Oh.
All right. And for me, I'm just going to go with Texas Tech at home against Texas this Tuesday. It's simple. Just keep it simple. Don't overthink it. They got better fundamentals. They got better stats, and they're at home. They're going to
take that
Chris
Beard coming back home, too. Yeah. That place is going to be rocking.
All right. So for my second over, this is my over 80. We've got Cal State Northridge heading all the way to Honolulu to take on the Golden or the Rainbow Warriors. Hawaii's favored 94.6%. That's an easy pick for me. And then Steve Cease also has his over 80. He's going with South Dakota State to rout North Dakota. That's an 98.5% favorite. So, Steve, feeling pretty confident in that one.
Always great when you get a matchup of the two Dakotas as well. For my final favorite, we're going with the Northeast Conference. We have St. Francis, Pennsylvania, visiting Wagner. Wagner, the Seahawks are 12-2 this year, 8-0 in conference. They're a 94.5% favorite, and I'm rolling with them here.
I think Leo and I have found our teams. Leo's got Wagner, and I got my Bulldogs of Gonzaga. We're going to head to the late-night Wild West Coast Conference, where the Gonzaga Bulldogs are set to host Loyola Marymount tonight at 10 o'clock. Gonzaga enters this game as a 99.1% favorite, and have lost just one conference game over the last four seasons. It's an easy lock, boys. Come on, Gonzaga.
For me, I'm going back to the Big Ten. I love Big Ten, and I'll tell you right now, Iowa is going to beat Penn State on Monday. They just played each other. It was a 68-51 final. I would expect the same outcome. Penn State needs a low-scoring game if they want to win any of these games in Big Ten conference play. Iowa does not ever have these low-scoring games. They're scoring 83.1 points per game.
We breed some corn-fed boys out there, I'll tell you what. I'm also sticking in the Big Ten. The Fighting Illini heading up to Evanston to play the Northwestern Huskies, right?
Wildcats. Wow, I can't believe you just messed that
brutal
one up.
I totally blanked. I looked at Joe for some. It doesn't matter. I'm taking
What's the percentage?
It's 72.4. Okay. I'm taking the Illini. Steve Cease is going with Army to beat Lafayette.
Mm-hmm. I believe Joey was thinking of the Northern Illinois Huskies. Yeah. Basically the same program.
They're the same school.
For my first underdog, we're going with a team that I went with last week, Texas A&M Corpus Christi, coming off a big win over McNeese. They're riding high, 15-5 on the season, facing Southeast Louisiana as a 46% underdog. So I'm going with the Islanders of Texas A&M CC here.
Leo's an island boy. So the Broncos of Boise State in their bright blue jerseys are going to be storming the hills of Fresno State tomorrow night in a pivotal Mountain West matchup. Fresno State is the home favorite at 56.8%, but the undefeated in conference play Broncos are going to silence the crowd and take down the Bulldogs. Boise State over Fresno State.
It's a sucker's pick. The Bulldogs are too good.
Nope.
For my first pick, I'm going to go back to the Missouri Valley Conference, and I'm going to hate to be a homer, especially on my first time, but I'm going to take Illinois State against Northern Iowa.
Ooh.
The stats look very promising compared to University of Northern Iowa. They at least have a shot. ISU plays much stronger fundamental basketball, I would say, in that matchup, and they also get good shots. They certainly have a chance.
I think they can win.
Guys,
that.
I think we have to agree. We're never allowing the news and sports guests to listen to our Redbird recap segments again, because that feels unfair, because I don't think ISU's going to win that game. My first underdog, I picked him earlier in the season. It worked out for me. The Long Beach State Beach, baby. They're traveling to UC Davis. They only have a 32.2% chance to win, but I'm taking them. Let's go, Beach. And then Steve Cease's first underdog, Indiana, at Maryland. Indiana's got a 48.3% chance to win.
And for my second underdog, we're going to sticking things on the East Coast. We got Fordham at George Washington. Fordham is a 9-9 on the season, while George Washington's 6-12. And Fordham's a 47.8% underdog, so I like those odds. Keeping it close to 50. Yeah. They're a 500 team. They'll get the win there.
George Washington, I think Congress should pass an act that a university has to be named after every president now.
I'd like that. Yeah.
You know. But I'm going to be going for a next matchup in the Big Ten play coming up on Saturday, where the Hoosiers of Indiana travel to College Park, Maryland to play the Terrapins. Indiana's coming off a major win against Purdue, but then followed that up with a very bad loss at home against Michigan. I think Indiana's going to take the close victory back home to the other and worse Bloomington, and Indiana wins as the 49% underdog.
All right, for me, my second one, I'm going to take Florida State on Wednesday against Clemson. They're going to be in Clemson, but it is an even matchup for scoring, and Clemson is ice cold. They've lost four of their last five. I don't expect them to be feeling all that good.
For my next underdog, I picked against Farley Dickinson last week. It worked for me. I'm picking against him again.
Dang.
We've got the Central Connecticut Blue Devils, boys. 37.4% chance to win. We're cheering for the Devils this weekend. They're my next underdog. As far as Steve Cease goes, he's picking UNC Wilmington to upset Hofstra. 28.8% on that one.
For my final underdog, I'm going with my Ivy League game of the week here. We have Yale going into Princeton, the undefeated in-conference Princeton. What are they, the Tigers?
Tigers.
Yeah. Tigers. I knew that one.
There we go.
Princeton's 5-0 in-conference, but I think that's misleading, as three of those wins have come by 4 points or less. Yale is 3-1 in conference. I think they're going to upset them as a 33.7% underdog.
I know one guy on the O team.
I wish that you guys could hear us in the office every day. Leo just badmouths Princeton every day. He's just like, well, they're not that good. They're not that good.
They are frauds, and they're going down this weekend.
All right, and to wrap up my picks for this week, I'm once again putting my faith into the Seahawks of UNC Wilmington, just like Steve Cease did. After they've seen the Birds take them down in the first game of the season, this team's prepared to beat anyone, take on anyone, even as the underdog. On Saturday, they're going to host the Hofstra Pride, who are favored at 69.9%. Nice. But I think it won't be enough for Hofstra and UNC Wilmington to get the W, so I'm taking Wilmington over Hofstra in the upset.
And for my last upset, I decided to save the one I'm most excited for last, but also the most risky one. Number four, Baylor, is going into Alabama this Saturday. Bama's a high-scoring offense. They nearly beat Auburn in a shootout. Baylor clearly not unbeatable after losing to Texas Tech and Oklahoma State. I'm going to take that one.
I actually really like
my
that.
My mom was just at the Bama game, too, so, I mean, that's a great pick. She put some great vibes in
there. All right, so my last pick, this is directly going against Leo's Valley game, but I've got the Valpo Beacons traveling down to SIU and taking care of business against the Salukis. They're only a 26.6% chance to win, but I think they've got it taken care of. And then Steve sees his last pick. He's got Cleveland State. They're traveling to Northern Kentucky, but Steve thinks they're going to get the job done.
And keeping things with this hardwood frenzy here, we have been talking so much college basketball that we're going to give you a chance to go watch some hoops here in Normal. Joey, tell the audience how they can win some free tickets.
All right, guys. WZND wants to send you to the rest of this season's ISU basketball games with the Redbird Basketball Blitz, but you got to be fast. We have season tickets to women's games for the rest of the year, but you have to call right now. This is the Basketball Blitz. We're only giving these season tickets away while supplies last. If you want to attend every women's Redbird basketball game for the rest of the season, including the one tonight, you could go right after the show. Call right now at 309-438-1033. Again, that's 309-438-1033. Call right now for your Redbird basketball tickets.
And I'd like to find someone in the Midwest who can do an ad read better than Mr. Joey Dwyer there, as that was efficient. That makes me want to go call
him. He's always good at those. You know, you got to give him credit.
Let's not give him too much credit, because he does have a big ego. That's all the time we have for this week's show. Stick around for that women's basketball game, because that's going to be a good one. Eric Schweizer and David Moses have the call, so you're not going to want to miss that. It was a great show tonight. Even with the hour early, we were still able to cover a lot of ground with Redbird basketball, talked about some Bears. Braden Fogerson brought some NASCAR analysis, and we got a great show coming up next week. This is one you're going to want to tune in for. Illinois State Athletic Director and I'd say our good friend Kyle Brennan will be coming on for the show
for the second time.
He's coming on, so that's going to be a really good interview. We're going to be talking about a lot of new stuff happening around campus. So don't miss that. That'll be back at 6 o'clock next week. So thanks a lot to everyone that came on the show tonight. For Braden Fogerson, Joe Kennedy, Joey Dwyer, that's all we have for this week's show. But stick around for that basketball game coming up next. You're listening to 103.3 WZND, the Pulse of Redbird Nation.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND, the Pulse of Redbird Nation.